Hello, this is international football commentator Derek Ray, and you're listening to the Ranks FC podcast.
Hello, Rank Squad, and welcome to Champions League Takeaway here on Ranks FC. My name's Jack Collins, and I'll be your host today as we work through the first two second legs of the quarterfinals. We have our first two semi-finalists in the form of reigning champions PSG, who won 2-0 at Anfield to complete a 4-0 victory on aggregate over Liverpool, and Atletico Madrid, who held off the Barcelona storm to win 3-2 on aggregate after losing 2-1 at the Metropolitano. I'm joined across the pond by the one and only Mr. Dean Jones. How you doing, mate?
Yeah, I'm good, mate. Yeah, that was a good fun night, wasn't it? It was competitive. I know the Liverpool one doesn't sound very competitive in the cold light of day, but It was. Liverpool put up a good fight, and obviously, I think, yeah, you watched the better game. Obviously, it was closer. There was more on the line, I think. But overall, I think we've seen two good games tonight.
Yeah, I completely agree. We'll start in Madrid, though, at the Wanda Metropolitano for that game between Atleti and Barcelona. 2-1 to Barcelona on the night, but not enough to overturn that 2-0 aggregate defeat, first leg defeat, I should say, at Camp Nou. And Dean, here's a couple of things here. I mean, the first is that I was talking to Sam and Doogie earlier on today. We were recording The Truth, and all of us were like, do you reckon we're on for something special here tonight? And it kind of felt like it. You know, at this point last week, when I watched Atleti win 2-0, their first victory at Camp Nou under Diego Simeone, their first victory there for 20 years, I kind of like did the podcast straight afterwards and was like, I think that might be it. I think Barcelona might be dead and buried. And as the game has got closer and closer, and you're seeing the discussions around it, you're seeing the interviews, that's a brilliant interview with Lamine Yamal, you're starting to think, actually, you know what? If anyone could, it's probably this Barcelona side. And then they rush into a 2-0 lead 24 minutes into this game. And you're like, oh, wow, we could be on for one of the all-time classic games here in the Champions League, not just in terms of a comeback, but it always felt like Atleti had the potential to score. Barcelona haven't kept a clean sheet now in 15 games in a row in the Champions League, which is a record for any Spanish side. And you're kind of like, oh, it really might open up. And then Atleti get the goal back a couple of minutes after Ferran Torres has leveled the tie on aggregate. Ademola Lookman slotting home from a brilliant, brilliant bit of work from Marcus Llorente.
That was a great ball. I thought he'd left it too long, but he nailed it.
I mean, and then you're thinking, wow, we've got an hour left of this game. Like, where on earth is it going to go? And I think of all the places that it might have gone at that play, at that moment in time, the last place I would be assuming is that was the last goal that we saw in this game.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it really did feel like we could be on for like a 4-3, a 5-4, like something
absolutely, yeah,
nuts in so many different ways. But it did. I think peter out is probably the wrong kind of word, because it's not like the game lost its energy. It wasn't like there wasn't chances at both ends. In fact, it was chaos maelstrom at times in this one. But I just couldn't believe that there wasn't going to be any more goals. And so I suppose we should work through it, because Barcelona started so incredibly hot here. Now, they score after 4 minutes, but in the first 10 minutes of this game, Juan Musso, who was preferred in goal to the returning Jan Oblak, which was a big call from Diego Simeone, makes two unbelievable saves, and they've conceded in the first 10 minutes. And you're thinking, well, okay, Barcelona are at it. Lamine Yamal having a shot palmed behind for a corner after like 30 seconds. And there was a couple of other ones as well in that opening period. So when Ferran scores a second, it's an absolutely brilliant finish from Ferran. And look, fair play to him. He's given the nod here. He scored his first goal to end a drought at the weekend in the derby win over Espanyol. But he takes this with such aplomb. You know, curls it into the top corner, and you're thinking, okay, well, if Ferran's at it, then they're all at it, right? And that's the kind of baseline that you're looking at. And, you know, in these kind of first 25 minutes or so, Barcelona just turn the screw constantly. They come out of the blocks lightning hot. And I suppose they kind of had to in some ways. There was no point trying to wait for this game to be 70 minutes. And that's not Barcelona's style at any given moment anyway. But I wonder now, you know, in the cold light of day, and, you know, we delayed recording this just by a couple of minutes because I was like, I really want to watch one moment back. And the moment I wanted to watch back was in the 25th minute, just after the Ferran goal that leveled it up on aggregate. There's a moment where the ball is played in from Lamine Yamal to Fermin Lopez. And he heads the ball, his back post coming in completely unmarked. And he has the ball. And Juan Musso makes an unbelievable save. Now, in the aftermath, there's a bit of a collision. It ends with Musso and Fermin colliding. And Fermin has to have his head bandaged up, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So it's a bit of a dramatic moment in all sorts. But you look at the way that the game turns after that, the goal that Atleti score, and then the way it plays out. I think if Barcelona take the lead on aggregate at that moment, I don't think they look back. Mm. And I think that the game pans out in such a different way because, you know, Atleti then have to not necessarily come out of their shell. That's not quite how this operated. And I do think that if any, you know, people who haven't watched Atleti in a couple of years watch the first half of this one, they would have been a bit shell-shocked in the chaotic nature of it, the open nature of this game, the way that the two teams pressed each other. There's a real difference, I think, to the way Atleti play this year that means that they're not. And look, there's still elements of this where they're willing to go backs to the wall and defend the lead, sure. But this is not the same team, right, that we've seen down the years. And Diego Simeone has had to adjust, has had to kind of change the outlook in terms of what this team looks like. But just the chaos of it, I think would have been maybe anathema to a few people who are watching Atleti, maybe not for the first time, but for the first time in a little while. And that, I think, was really interesting because it was, especially in the first half, such a brilliant showcase of where these two teams are at. And it was just a slugfest in so many different ways.
Yeah, exactly. Like you say, people have predetermined expectations of what Atleti are, and they are hard to get away from because it's still Simeone sitting in the chair, sitting on his throne, and you just assume that he's never going to change. But they are different these days, and I think we've seen, obviously, these sides play each other every week now. So we see
this was the final chapter, thankfully, for everyone involved, I think.
The final chapter for everyone. And obviously Barcelona have won the La Liga side of it, but Atleti have come out on the Champions League side of things.
And the Copa del Rey side of things.
So yeah, the cup side of things has not gone Barca's way. They've probably won the game they didn't really need to. Like, they've obviously, it's helped them like surge ahead in the league, and it looks like it's going to be in the bag, as you would say. But the way things are going over at Real Madrid, they probably would have gone on to secure the title anyway. So, you know, that's probably a bit of a frustration for them that was the only time they had their number. But, you know, Simeone, you could see at the end, he had a very satisfied grin on his face, Simeone, as his players celebrated that win. And too right, to be honest. It must have been nerve-wracking. I mean, you talked about the beginning of the game. I've only obviously seen the highlights while I was watching the Liverpool game, but it looked like they could have been 2-0 up before they even scored the first goal. And that was early on enough from Lamine. He was doing bits, wasn't he? Like, he was playing like his life depended on it.
Oh, I mean, yeah. But he was in the first leg as well, right? Actually, you look at these two games and it was, you know, a masterclass from Lamine Yamal in lots of different ways. And over 180 minutes, he's probably got a relative claim of being the best player on the park.
Yeah.
And, you know, over 180 minutes, you know, Barcelona will argue that they played the better football, I think, in this one. But what's interesting for me is that Atleti have managed the situation here. And you look at where they are in the league, like, they're not going to be caught in the Champions League places because Betis can't hit a barn door with a banjo right now and just can't buy a win. But you actually look at where Atleti have focused their energy, and obviously they have a Copa del Rey to deal with as well. They're pretty comfortable in the fact that they will finish in the top four in La Liga, so they're going to get a Champions League place. It looks like it's going to be five anyway. Mm-hmm. You know, and look what the changes they make. They lose to Sevilla at the weekend. But from that lineup, only Juan Musso survives into today's starting lineup. He makes 10 full changes, like, it's wholesale across the board. And even then, you look at the players that came on at the weekend, only Ademola Lookman came on to that pitch who started in this Atleti side today. And there's not even many players, you know, Alex Sorlot comes on, Alex Baena comes on. There's not even many players who come on as substitutes. That's the amount of changes that are made here, right? Like, because clearly Diego Simeone's head is focused on what he wants to win here in cup competition. He's done enough in the league that they don't need to necessarily worry about it. And it's something we've talked about before, that this Atleti squad feels to me very kind of, it's good across the board. And there are a couple of standout players, absolutely fine. But actually what they are able to do, because it's a deep squad where the level doesn't drop all that much. And look, the weekend was a little bit different because they play a couple of academy players. I thought both fullbacks did really well, for what it's worth. But, you know, they're able to make those changes and kind of throw that game almost on the back of, right, the big one this week is Barcelona, because our priorities this season lie in the Copa del Rey and in the Champions League. Mm-hmm. And that gives them a slight edge, I think, in these competitions, because they can, you know, go out for it. And we've talked about this with other teams before, including like Bayern, who will have the league sewed up by the time that they reach maybe even the second leg of the semifinals, if they get that far. But I think this is different in that it's not going to be like, oh, Atleti are, you know, sailing away with a title. So therefore the changes that they make are, oh, it doesn't really matter what the result of this game is. It still does. So there's still players trying to work their way in from these league lineups, if you will. And look, they didn't give a particularly good account of themselves at the weekend, and that's another story. But, you know, those players are looking for opportunities to play in a Copa del Rey final, to now play in a Champions League semi-final over two legs. I think it's going to be very interesting for them over the course of this season now, the rest of this season, how many of these players can work themselves into the thinking, or if Diego Simeone is just going to go with the tried and trusted. And you look, you go to the midfield tandem here that was used, Marcus Llorente and Koke, right? Like two old soldiers of this Atleti side. But Llorente has been doing a job wherever he's been played for the best part of, you know, most of this decade almost now, it feels like, at Atleti. And Koke has been, you know, one of the great servants of the club of all time, full stop. Never mind just in this generation, I think just ever. And the way that he was able to slow this game down, I think, at the start of the second half, the way that he was able to allow Atleti to work out some pressure. And look, that doesn't mean that they had control or anything like that. It was very much a Barcelona-dominated game in terms of the way that the possession worked. But I think in the first half, it felt like it was super swingy end-to-end. And obviously, there's an element of fatigue that comes into that. But I also think that, you know, the more that Atleti grew into the game, when they got the lead back and they started to reassert some control, and obviously we'll come to the red card in a minute, and after that things changed again. But I thought that Koke's influence on the game was more pronounced than I think maybe people will give him credit for. And look, a couple of years ago, it felt like his generation from this Atleti side were completely done. His resurrection, to, you know, to coin a phrase or to use the pun, feels like such an important part of what this Atleti side has become. And we talk about naivety sometimes, and we talk about teams who don't necessarily have the experience to guide them through. It's been an accusation leveled a lot at Chelsea this season, but I think you can put it into a number of different teams. What Koke brings in the middle of the park here, that calmness under pressure, the fact he's been there and done it for so many different years, gives them a platform for players like Lookman and Alvarez and Griezmann and even Simeone Jr. on the right-hand side to thrive and actually get forward and not worry about them not being covered by this midfield partnership. And I think he and what he brings to the table sometimes goes very, very underrated.
Yeah, it definitely does. And I think, look, Atleti go underrated at the moment. And I think that is intriguing as they now step foot into the semi-final, because, you know, say the big thing that everybody's been looking at in the Champions League is Arsenal's progression, for example, from a high profile standpoint, of being like, okay, well, Arsenal was set to meet Bayern Munich in the final, right? And now you get to this phase, and obviously Arsenal play against Sporting on Wednesday night. They've got a one goal lead. They might not make it through to the semi-final. But even if they do, I'll tell you what, there's a new trepidation about this one. I think you look at Atleti and you look at the way that they've dealt with Barcelona, who are a better team than Arsenal are at the moment.
Right now, yeah, sure.
Right now, yeah, in this moment, like, they are better than Arsenal. And I think that Atleti have every reason now to believe that whoever goes through from that game, they can take them. And I think they'll be happy with where they sit in the food chain right now. I think they want to be underestimated.
I mean, there's always an element of kind of the underdog with a Simeone side. And, you know, maybe that doesn't stand up quite as much anymore with the amount of money that Atleti have spent in recent seasons. And, you know, I'm sure that there are plenty of fans from other sides in Spain who are like, we would kill for the amount of money that Atleti can spend on players and wages and all of the above. So I'm not 100% sure if the underdog story rings true or the narrative, but they will probably go into the semi-finals as the outsiders. And I think that that suits them. There's always been an element of that with Simeone that, you know, his team are kind of the small dog with a big bark in any given fight. But I think that maybe that isn't necessarily true, but it will suit them, as you say, if the narrative is that, that they come in as the underdogs, as they come in as the unfancied kind of grizzled warrior, I suppose, on the outside of things. But obviously, in the second half of this one, there are some moments. There's a goal disallowed for Barcelona. I mean, Ferran is quite clearly offside, so I don't think there's much kind of drama around that. The big moment comes just before the 80th minute with a challenge from Eric Garcia, who came into this back line from a Barcelona perspective and, you know, steps in for Pau Cabarsi, who's obviously sent off in the first leg. There was a bit of chat during the week that actually it might be Jules Koundé that played at centre-back with either Eric Garcia or someone else playing in the right-back slot. That didn't happen to be the case. It was Martin, it was Garcia in the middle pairing with Koundé and Cancelo on either flank. But just before the 80th minute, there's a slipped pass through to Alexander Sorloth, who's been Barcelona's tormentor over the last sort of 6-7 games he's played against them. I think it's a goal kind of less than every 90 minutes, which is an incredible record against Barcelona. But Eric Garcia clips the back of Alex Sorloth as he's running through. Now, I think that whilst you're looking at that, there's a question of, okay, if he's last man, it's 100% a red card. It's arguably more of a red card than the Pau Cabarsi one last week. And I thought that was a perfectly fair sending off. But the question is Jules Koundé getting across? Well, and would he get across in time to stop Sorloth having a shot? Now, the referee has decided on the monitor, having been called back to look at it, that Sorloth is going to get a shot away. So therefore, it's an Isle of Goal scoring opportunity. And therefore, it's a straight red card. Barcelona are a bit perplexed by this. I am not sure is the truth of the matter. And I think that it's one of those where it was given as a yellow card on the pitch. And I think maybe if it had been given as a red card on the pitch, I'd be more okay with it, slightly more okay. I'm not completely anti it being a red card, but I think that Koundé might just be getting across to stop a shot. Mm. And the fact that it was overturned despite being given that way on the pitch, I think is interesting because it did feel like there was more cover perhaps than the referee gave it credit for.
Yeah, that's fair. And obviously, We've seen, it feels like at least, I mean, I need to check the stats for this before I claim it as a fact, the frequency of red cards in these sorts of games does feel like it's on the up, partly because of VAR, but also partly just because it seems like you can't touch anyone these days. So this again has become part and parcel of the Champions League and part and parcel of game management in these types of ties. But ultimately it's one that you've got to be able to come to terms with. And yeah, ultimately that's a tough one to take. What minute did that happen in? I didn't catch what
health. 10 minutes to go before the end. It was, I think, the 79th minute where the actual red card was produced. There was obviously then 8 minutes of added time. So there was around 20 minutes to go.
Yeah.
It was sent off and one goal in the balance. And, you know, from that moment, I thought Atleti sort of poured forward a bit more than people would perhaps.
Well, exactly, because then you can leave a man up, right? And that's a difficult thing to do because then Atleti don't all have to be behind the ball as much as they might have had to do before. So that's a tricky one to manage to. Obviously, you've got to go for it in that instance, but you've got to leave yourself even more exposed.
Yeah, I mean, look, the two things could be true, I think, at the same time. Both goalkeepers were absolutely immense for most of this game. Some unbelievable stops from both Joan Garcia and Juan Musso and, you know, changed the tie in the direction of their respective teams in different moments during this game. I mean, look, Barcelona, I think, to mostly a man, played really quite well. I thought that Ferran had an excellent game up top, which is a slight rarity, I suppose, more these days. Lamine Yamal, as we've already spoken about, was excellent. I thought Fermin made things happen. The returning Gavi, I thought, was phenomenal in the middle of the park. I thought that Gerard Martin had a good game. I thought Cancelo was excellent down the left. So you can look at that and be like, oh, Barcelona played some lovely football. They've obviously scored two goals. They've won on the night. it's an impressive display. But the thing I think that I'd like to give Atleti the most credit for, and bear in mind, you know, they weren't at full strength either. There was a couple of suspensions and injuries here. David Hansko missing from the center of the defensive line, I think was a big miss from a Barcelona, from an Atleti perspective. But actually what I thought they did really well was they rode the wave of the game. And that sounds a little bit frilly and a little bit flowery, but obviously, you know, we talked about that Barcelona start coming out hot. They concede the two goals and it's level on aggregate, but they hit back relatively quickly. And they've done a good job, I think, Atleti, of scoring at the right times in over the 180 minutes of this game. You know, they've been clinical with their chances in the moments that really, really mattered. But more than that, you know, they knew that Barcelona would start fast. They knew they were going to have to deal with that. And they did to an extent. Like, the game could have gone. And as we said earlier, if that third goal goes in, maybe this takes on a completely different spin and maybe it goes in a different direction. But they don't, partly because of some excellent goalkeeping, partly because of some very, very good defending, and partly because, you know, you just ride it a little bit when those moments are happening. And as the second half came into it, they were able to utilize the fact that they'd scored the goal before halftime to get the crowd back into it. There was no let up in the atmosphere at the Metropolitano through the entirety of this one. And then as the game progressed, they were able to settle into it a little bit more. There weren't as many opportunities from a Barcelona perspective in the second half, although I think that Ronald Araujo will be having nightmares about his missed header right at the end of this one for long, long weeks to come. It felt like the big moment, the big chance for it to kind of come. But I thought that where Atleti really kind of managed as well, and Simeone deserves immense credit for this, is not panicking at 2-0 down, right? And not panicking when they were under siege for the first 15, 20 minutes of this game. They just kind of managed the situation to the best of their ability. They gave themselves the opportunity with that goal before the break. And then in the second half, they were able to calm it down. It wasn't like wave after wave after wave of Barcelona pressure in the way that it had been for long spells of the first half. And they deserve, I think, immense credit for that.
Yeah, mate, they deserve immense credit for getting through the first 5 minutes from what I saw. So to get through the 90 and to make it into the semi-final is certainly well done.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. All right, we're going to take a little break there. On the other side, we're going to talk about PSG's win at Anfield. Make sure you stick with us here on Ranks FC. Welcome back to Champions League Takeaway here on Ranks FC. Jack Collins and Dean Jones with you, looking at the second legs, the first day of the second legs of these quarterfinals, where we have our first two semi-finalists in the shape of Atletico Madrid and reigning champions PSG, who won 2-0 at Anfield to make it 4-0 on aggregate. It looks comprehensive, Dean, but it wasn't quite as clear-cut as that for most of this game, I didn't think.
It wasn't clear-cut, but, you know, also PSG had some game management to do and that they had to dig deep, and they knew that they would be under the cosh for periods of the game. And Liverpool did produce one of their better performances of the season, which was helpful, but not helpful enough. Ultimately, Liverpool have been knocked out of the final two competitions that they could win this season by Manchester City and PSG in the space of 10 days to end their season. They're beaten 4-0 by Man City, and they've been beaten 4-0 on aggregate by PSG. Ultimately, this team just are not at this level at the moment. And yeah, you can give them some credit for making a go of this second leg at Anfield, and there'll probably be people that claim that they were worthy of a draw. But, you know, this is Liverpool. This is a team that typically believes that they have a chance of making a comeback, and sometimes do at least stage an attempted comeback. And while there were hints of it here, PSG were too good. Defensively, they had Liverpool's number. And in attack, they have a fizz that is always going to mean that they score. They're always going to score. And that's why they will now believe that they could retain this trophy. PSG go on to face Bayern Munich or Real Madrid. We'll find that out on Wednesday night. But look, they should believe that they can go back-to-back in this competition. It's certainly not impossible. There were moments in this game where it was backs to the wall. There were moments when they had to make huge blocks, and they came through those moments. And then when their chances came, they eventually took them. Liverpool, when their chances came, they didn't take them. Look, if we look back on the game, there was a surprise straight at the start because Alex Isak was given the nod to start the game. didn't think that would happen. He's go back to December since his last start. Didn't really work out here. A gamble that didn't really pay off. And in the opening stages of the game, it looked like PSG might have it all tied up pretty early. They had multiple good chances. Credit to Mamardashvili for keeping them in the game, Liverpool. And so they were hanging in there. And then just before the half hour mark, Liverpool had bad news because Ekitike pulls up with an injury, which looks like it's bad. Was hard to tell exactly what it was in the moment. Looked like he was grabbing his ankle. People debating exactly what it was.
Looks like an Achilles to me.
It seems like an Achilles. A lot of people talking, you know, and he kind of says to the physio, he kind of makes this gesture, which maybe it's his Achilles pings, which is what, you know, people say it's like a brick hitting you, basically, is how it feels as that Achilles goes. If that has happened, obviously he's going to be out for a while. There's potential there, obviously, that he won't make it to the World Cup. Ultimately, he couldn't carry on this game. So Mo Salah came on in that moment. Salah, perhaps surprised to find himself on the subs bench for a game of this kind of importance. I do wonder, you know, about the conditioning of this Liverpool team at times. You know, I'm not saying that it's the backroom staff's fault that he got injured here, but it does seem like Liverpool always have problems this season. Like, are we ever going to see Wirtz, Isak and Ekitike for extended periods? Well, the answer now we know is no. We're not going to see those three.
Not this season anyway.
Properly together. And yeah, exactly. And we're going to be going into next season and probably maybe under a new manager. We'll have to wait to see about that one. But certainly I would suggest that if there was any doubts about whether they will replace Mo Salah in the squad when he leaves at the end of the season, the fact that those three are going to prove to be quite fragile, I think, means that we will be seeing Liverpool go into the transfer market and sign somebody quite significant. Look, before we got to half time, PSG did need to put bodies on the line, and nobody more so than Marquinhos. Marquinhos made a sensational stop in a moment when Liverpool were, they were almost already celebrating, to be honest with you. Salah stuck across into the box moments after coming on. It goes towards the far post. Kerkez like directs it in on goal. It's a good save, but the ball bounces back and it looks like Van Dijk's got a tap in. But Marquinhos comes in, block of the season probably. He roars.
Crime.
He absolutely roars and celebrates this block. And fair enough, because it was a huge moment in the game. Konate actually ends up celebrating a block down the other end not too long after. And to be fair, it wasn't as good as Marquinhos's, but it was equally important because Dembele had a chance at the near post where he could have hooked it in. But Konate managed to defend his goal well. There was a blow too for PSG, by the way, during that half as Nuno Mendes was taken off with injury. Now, at half time, Isak's dragged. So that gap, you know, we knew that Isak couldn't play very long. We knew that 45 minutes was probably his limit. And I think most people would have thought, well, that will come in the second half.
Well, it was he barely touched the ball.
He barely touched the ball. He might as well have not been out there. He had one half chance, I can remember, but he was pretty anonymous. So he comes off. Jeremy Frimpong struggled. So they were both taken off. Joe Gomez and Cody Gakpo came into the game. And I'll be honest, like Liverpool really did start well the second half and you were just waiting for the net to bulge. They just couldn't score. And the problem at that point was they were putting so much into their attacks, it was leaving them vulnerable. And I was just wondering whether the PSG counter would catch them out at some point. It seemed like it would be inevitable. Now, just after the hour mark, it looks like Liverpool have had a touch of luck because they get a penalty. Alexis McAllister goes down under a challenge from William Pacho. And on the commentary out here, they were saying, oh yeah, there is a touch there. There is a touch. Like, I'm sorry, that was not a penalty. McAllister's got himself there quickly. Like, fair play to him for getting across and even making that feasible. But that's not a penalty. Pacho does touch him, but he's already halfway down, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, I tell you what, like, I'm kind of with you, but I'm also surprised it was overturned. It's another one of those where I think if it's not given on the pitch, it doesn't get given by VAR. But I'm surprised it was overturned because look, there is a level of get to the ball first. And yes, you wait for the, he's waiting for the contact 100%, no doubt about it, but he's waiting for the contact and the contact comes. I'm surprised it was flipped.
Let me he's tumbled halfway before the contacts come. And I don't blame him for looking for a pen in that moment. Liverpool needs something. I mean, let's be honest, Salah would have missed the penalty anyway, so it doesn't matter.
He was going to slam it, though.
Well, yeah, I'm going to say, Salah's missed his last two against Galatasaray, Man City. So maybe somebody else would have stepped up to the spot. Rio and Gamoa came on for the last half hour, nearly scored 5 minutes later, forced a very good save. But yeah, just as Liverpool looked like they might get that goal, as the Anfield crowd was still believing, Jack, bang, PSG killed them. I was surprised that this was the manner in which it came. It wasn't a surprise in the type of players that were involved in the play, Barkla and Kvaratskhelia, but then it's Dembele left in space just outside the box, like 10 yards in space, and McAllister looks to close him down. But I just cannot believe that so central on basically the D of the penalty box that Dembele is allowed to even linger in that area. And he's even given the time to flip the ball onto his left foot and steer it in.
He's so good at this, right? Like we spoke about it so often last year when he drifts out of the space and vacates the centre-backs. And, you know, obviously he's very, very difficult to pick up. And it's not been Ousmane Dembele's best season, you know, on the back of obviously receiving the Ballon d'Or last year. He hasn't had the same kind of impact. And I think that, you know, to be honest, Kvaratskhelia for long periods this season has looked like PSG's most dangerous attacker. But equally, you know, he still has that ability to change a game on a sixpence, and it came into the fore here.
Yeah, exactly. And this is the thing, right? Like Liverpool, while they were fine in this game and they were actually good at times, but they still don't have that thrust. They still don't have what they had last season when it looked like every attack would end up with the ball in the back of the net. And PSG, they just go. And it's just like when you've got Kvara and Barkla and Dembele, whatever combination, but particularly that three at the moment, obviously Doué was replaced in this game. Barkla came on for him. But they're so dynamic. They're so confident. And eventually they will put the ball away. And this Liverpool team doesn't really have that. I mean, their record at the moment, Liverpool, of getting wins is just, it's just so unconvincing. They've obviously managed to beat Fulham at the weekend. Of course they did. I mean, that's exactly the type of game they needed. But, you know, lost to Brighton away. Their last win before Fulham was Galatasaray. And then you go back, they beat Wolves in the FA Cup, beat West Ham in the Premier League. When they are put up against like the top tier opponents, they're struggling. And it's not really a surprise that their season ends at the hands of a Man City and a PSG, because Liverpool just aren't at that level at the moment. Ultimately, their season's killed in the 90th minute when Liverpool are caught out upfield. Kvaratskhelia, Barkla.
Like also just fine, isn't it? Like you're trying to get a goal so to maintain that. Like,
but PSG just put together this flowing move, and then before you know it, the ball's in the back of the net. PSG are celebrating in front of their fans there. They're on their way to the semi-finals. Look, in the past couple of seasons in the Champions League, PSG eliminate English clubs for fun, whether it's Liverpool, Aston Villa, Arsenal, Chelsea. Like they love it. So let's see what the future does hold for them. I definitely am starting to believe in them more than I was earlier in this competition. I didn't think they would have the ability to retain this title, but given that there aren't really any great team, like I genuinely think that the only team definitely better than them consistently is Bayern Munich, but I don't think that definitely Bayern Munich would beat PSG. So I think that this is a very, very big opportunity to keep that trophy in Paris.
Couple of things, I suppose. I mean, I agree with you. I think the Bayern are the best side left in the competition, but you know, whether they'd, you know, this would be a great, great semi-final. And yeah, from a neutral perspective, and I'm sure there would be Madridistas kind of screaming down the line at this point. Like I really, really hope we do get that PSG Bayern semi-final over two legs, because I think it could be an absolute corker.
It'd be great. Yeah, it would be a good game, yeah.
I mean, look, there's still a few things. We'd have to see what that Nuno Mendes injury is and what it looks like, because I think without him, they do lose a little bit on that left-hand side. And it's not particularly, you know, hot take, considering that I think that Nuno Mendes is the best left-back in the world. But, you know, they would be hurt by that, even if Lucas Hernandez is a very capable backup in that area. I think it'd be very interesting. They've grown into this season, I think, PSG. And the first half of it, you know, really, really hampered by injuries. I think they've struggled with the fitness off the back of the Club World Cup and the fatigue that's put on them. But it does feel like they're just strolling into their own. And, you know, they've opened up a lead at the top of Ligue 1, which looks relatively unassailable, which means that they can probably throw all their eggs into this basket once again. And I think that that's going to be, you know, an intriguing kind of sub-narrative around all of it. There is, you know, there was a question, I suppose, about PSG this season about who was going to be in goal and, you know, whether there was a major weakness. And, you know, when people talk about this team compared to last year's team, they'll talk about Donnarumma compared to Matvei Safonov, who seems to have claimed the number one shirt as his own over Lucas Chevalier at this point. This was a bit of I hate to say coming of age game. The man's 27, but you know, for Safonov, this felt like a big performance on a European stage, which is a sphere and a world in which he has struggled at times before. And look, this might age incredibly badly, and he might, you know, struggle in a game if they do come up against Bayern to deal with the threat that Bayern possess in the final third. But I thought tonight at Anfield, he really did kind of put in a very, very sharp performance. I thought he made a couple of absolutely brilliant saves. You mentioned the one from Ngamoah. There's a couple of goal mouth scrambles in there as well. I thought he did a very, very good job today, Safonov.
And oh, definitely, yeah.
After all of the kind of question marks about what it was going to look like, who it was going to be, whether the defensive line would hold, it does feel like they're starting to gain a little bit of traction with him behind this defensive four, which feels like... Yeah. It might take them onwards. I did just want to ask a question about Liverpool, because you know, this was so much better as a performance than the first leg. Now, obviously, they lose the game by the same scoreline. But today, Liverpool gave their fans things to cheer, things to open up. They could have, with a couple of things going their way, you know, changed the outcome of this tie. Maybe not to the extent that they would have gone and won it, but I think they could have given themselves hope. They were a little bit unlucky, as we say, with that penalty. You know, whether you think it's a penalty or not, for it to be overturned on that kind of call, I think is interesting, and that, you know, could have gone another way with a different referee, etc. They could have had moments tonight. And I think that the Anfield crowd really responded to that. Now, I was at Anfield at the weekend and the atmosphere was incredibly subdued. Part of that is the current protests going on at Liverpool, which, you know, are about ticket prices. And there was a full kind of protest, no, not pound in the ground. No one was buying drinks. There was no flags in the cop, et cetera, et cetera. So that was part of the atmosphere. But you see it on a European night and there's always that kind of feeling that Anfield might have the potential to kind of sparkle and go. And I think that the team kind of gave them stuff to sparkle and go for tonight. The atmosphere felt kind of febrile at times. It felt incredibly loud at Anfield, which is what you expect from a European night, sure. But it would have been very easy to see this season kind of petering out. And, you know, at 2-0 down when PSG scored that second goal, for people to stream for the exits. That's not really what it felt like. And you saw the kind of ovation that was given at the end of the game. You heard the noise, the chants, etc. And I suppose what I'm trying to get at is, Arne Slot has, you know, employed two very different methodologies, right, in these two legs. The first leg, we saw him, you know, basically saying they were in survival mode, you know, resorting to all of the things that he said he's hated over the course of the season, the low block, the lack of possession, the long throws, et cetera, et cetera. And today they go out and they give a performance I think people who are Liverpool fans will be quite proud of against the reigning European champions. Not, you know, delighted by the result or anything like that, but I think they'll look at that and be like, yeah, you know what, we gave it a go. Whereas last week's performance, and I said this on Champions League Takeaway last week, felt so fearful, right? Like it felt like of all of the places where Liverpool have been down the years in Europe, they've never felt like a team who was scared of their opposition. They've always been like, right, we'll give it a go. And if we lose, we lose. Last week felt really, really anathema to kind of what you know from a Liverpool team in Europe. This was much more like it. And although the outcome is the same, I think it would be a very different conversation being had around Liverpool if Arne Slot had employed this kind of tactical setup and gone for it a little bit more when he was at the Parc des Princes.
I just think that he had fear set in. I mean, before the first leg, he was going into it off a 4-0 battering from Man City that had completely rattled them. You know, they'd been completely taught a lesson at the Etihad. If the first leg had been at Anfield, it would have been so much better for this team to have an opportunity to be the team that took dominance. I feel that like they went to Paris probably thinking that even if we can keep this to one goal, we've got a chance. And you've only got to look at the stats. You know, Liverpool away in Paris, they had a total of 3 shots. They didn't have a shot on target. They had 26% of the ball.
But that game plan is only given praise if it works, and it didn't work.
No, exactly. But then tonight, you flip it, and Liverpool have had 21 shots on goal. They've had 53% of the ball. But ultimately, the tie's pretty much already dead. Like, they've got to go and do that. But also, they feel a bit more confident because they're coming into it at home on the back of a home win that was very comfortable against Fulham. I just think the conditions of this second leg were very different to the conditions that were set up for the first leg. And ultimately, Liverpool just... they're just not at this level at the moment, mate. And that's why they've got to have a big look at themselves behind the scenes to decide whether this is good enough to continue with into next season. Now, depends who you believe right now. Some people say that there is a consideration to part ways with the manager before next season because things are so far away from what they were last season that there are no signs of them being able to compete with those sides at the very top at the moment. On the flip side of it, there are journalists that are being briefed that Arne Slot is safe if Liverpool qualify for next season's Champions League, and given that they are in fifth position at the moment, they're 4 points clear of Chelsea, who are the position behind them. It looks like Liverpool probably will make that. Now, look, if they lose to Everton at the weekend, maybe that changes the outlook. Like, that is a huge game. Like, Everton still got plenty to play for this season, and there's nothing they would love more than to completely rattle Liverpool in this season and to
still finish above them.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, when you look at the positions right now, they are 5... God, my maths is so bad. They're on 47 points. Liverpool are on 52. That makes a 5-point gap. So there you go. They'll close the gap to 2 points on them. And what a season. I mean, if Everton go from here to finish above Liverpool, I mean, then obviously that's a disaster for Liverpool, but it's an historic season for Everton in their first season in their new stadium. So this game at the weekend now takes on new meaning for me, and I think has to be really closely studied in terms of whether they carry this on into next season.
Yeah, 100%. It's a big weekend. Lots and lots of big games across a lot of different places this weekend. And we'll be covering those over on our Patreon on our Friday Fiesta as we look ahead to what is going to be a big weekend of football. But on that note, I think we're going to draw this podcast to a close. So all that's left for me to do is say thank you very much to The Athletic's very own Dean Jones.
Cheers, mate.
I've been Jack Collins. This has been Champions League Takeaway here on Ranks FC. Thank you so much for listening as ever. And we'll see you very shortly, Rank Squad. Take it easy. Peace.